Welcome to another episode of the Todos Mathematics for All podcast. Our mission is to advocate for equity and high-quality mathematics education for all students, in particular Latina and Latino students. Well, some of you may or may not know that at Todos we also have five goals to help us carry out our mission, which you can find on our website. Number one of which is to advance educators' knowledge and ability that leads to implementing an equitable, rigorous, and coherent mathematics program that incorporates the role language and culture play in teaching and learning mathematics. The role of language and culture, that's where we are today. Today's episode is a conversation between three women of color mathematics educators, three Latinas mixing it up about our passions, teaching mathematics and doing right by our communities. Griselda Resendiz is a mathematics teacher in the Escondido Union High School District. Zandra De Araujo is an associate professor of learning, teaching, and curriculum at the University of Missouri, is also a board member of TODOS. She was a high school mathematics teacher prior to earning her PhD. And in my work, I've studied the research on supporting English learners in mathematics classrooms, mostly in elementary school settings, which in California is kindergarten through fifth or sixth grade. And I also work in bilingual teacher education. So how does a high school mathematics teacher with a high population of multilingual learners, many of whom are new to English and who speak a variety of languages, how does a high school mathematics teacher balance the teaching of the math content with the development of English language proficiency? In particular, teachers of color who were EL students themselves might be presumed to know how to do it because they experienced it themselves in their own classrooms, but it's not always the case. Also, teachers of color serving their communities frequently put a lot of pressure on themselves. They always want to be doing better. They want to figure out exactly how they can reach their students more effectively and really get them through this school system. So we constantly are asking ourselves questions. It keeps us evolving as professionals. And we always want to know, how can I do more? And we jump into our conversation when we're just concluding a little sense-making discussion about the different acronyms that we use across our different states to denote, well, lots of differences among our English learners.
Yeah, that's helpful. I know.
This is Andra talking right now.
When it comes to this, so it's interesting to see. I mean, California perennially is probably one of the ones that has the most services in place and has paid the most attention just because the population is so great. But the Midwest has pockets where the population is pretty great. And so understanding everything's important. So I appreciate you sharing. It is really difficult. I was a high school math teacher in Orlando, Florida, and we had a lot of students. We did not shelter in my school, but I taught a general ed class. And as students came in from either if they were seasonal workers in the orange fields, or in other cases, they were coming from Haiti or Mexico or other places. That was probably where we got most of our students. They were placed in my class just because of age. So I've seen both. My dissertation study was actually on sheltered classes in Georgia. And so it's nice to hear you say the struggles, because it is a struggle when not teaching the students, but like just being ourselves, like, we were not prepared to face everything, because a lot of the examples I think we get in teacher prep is like bilingual classes or classes where everybody seems to be kind of on the same level mathematically or in terms of English. And that's not the reality in a lot of these classes, as you've said.
And just for our listeners thinking ahead, what is sheltered actually? Can you explain what it is? It a shared definition across the country too?
So in the states that I've worked, it means that you're sheltering them from the, I guess it's a weird term, right? Like, so you're protecting, I think that's the intent between that term. But you're grouping the students that are all learning English into a class to support them in learning mathematics together with a teacher who has typically received extra training in English language acquisition. I don't know if that's similar in California.
I don't know about the extra training part,
yeah.
But the idea of the grouping so that there's the shared language, or that you are quote unquote sheltered from too much English. Yes, I see that.
Now what ends up happening, I found, is that they don't all share the same language typically, because you can't just say like, we're going to not shelter the students that are not like from the dominant second or home name language. And then also that protecting from English is weird to say because you're not teaching and instructing in their native language. So you're still instructing in English. So it's an interesting concept, I would say. So I think maybe we could talk about some of the things that you raised. So you talked about having Core Plus, which is, you're right, it's one of the NSF funded curriculum from the 90s. And it is language intensive, I would say, in terms of the reading demands. Do you find that so?
Yeah, I do. Even in my mainstream classroom, it's been a journey, I would say, in getting them used to that their textbook now has a lot of reading. And in order to do some of the investigations that we're going to be doing in class, we're going to read and we're going to have to understand what is in the story, what are some of the key words. So it's still been a journey. And then taking that and then now putting it with students who already have this intimidation and, you know, have stigmas and, you know, with their English, it's like I'm always trying to figure out how can I make this more friendly? How can I make it less intimidating? How can I make it into a fun activity that we're all going to read so that like we still get the main information? And that's where I then come in feeling like, okay, I need more training on how to do this, or I need to talk to more people. But, you know, life of a teacher, it's always hard to sometimes get out there and do that on my own. So, it's been a journey, and I mean, it's getting better, but I still feel like there's more I can do, but I am always like, what is that more that I can do?
Mm-hmm. So I think that it's really good that you're letting them talk in their first language in class. Cause there's, in the review of literature that my colleagues and I did, one of the things that stuck out to us is that proficiency in L1 or L2, they both correlate with math proficiency, it seems, from the literature. So even though you say, like, I have to support the English, but I think that as you gain proficiency and understanding in your home language, they are gaining English. They're in the United States, right? They're exposed to a lot of English throughout the day, even outside of your class. So I think once you understand something well enough, you're more apt to be able to convey that meaning in a second language. So if I don't understand something very deeply in, let's go with Portuguese, or let's go with English and then I'll translate to Portuguese because that's my parents' home language. So if I don't understand something deeply in English, I can't figure out ways to communicate that in Portuguese because first of all, my Portuguese is not very fluent. And then I need to find the words that correlate directly with English because I only know how to do a direct translation. Whereas if I have like a deep understanding, I could simplify the way I restate something or say it in more clear terms in my second language because I don't have access to the same vocabulary or the same understanding. Does that make sense at all?
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of research that suggests that to explain things well means that you need to have a deep understanding. And so if that deep understanding, if your main language is not English, you're going to develop that deep understanding in your home language, whatever.
And so to clarify, because something that I often hear from teachers I work with is a conflation of what the deep understanding needs to be about. And so I hear that interpreted sometimes as they need to have a lot of vocabulary in English. Versus what I think I'm hearing you say, Xander, which is that the concept needs to be deeply understood because then you'll use whatever language resources you have to communicate it. Is that about right?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. So let's do an example. So say I can explain the notion of a rhombus. Like I know it has same sides and there's four of them. I could say that pretty simply, like closed shape, four sides, they're all the same. So I don't have to use really complicated language to explain that, or I don't need to know the word rhombus to explain that either, right? So I can explain a lot of understanding using pretty simple terms to like get a shared meaning of what it is that I'm trying to say without like defining the word. And then the teacher can bring in the word later and be like, oh, what you're, you know, talking about actually is called a rhombus.
Yeah, and then I think this is one of the things I did leave out, because I think this is the first year where I've started with a bigger percentage of native language at the semester. And every so often I'm like, all right, we're going to decrease our Spanish. We're going to increase this much percentage. So it's always, I've never kept track of like, oh, this is how much Spanish and English we talk. But like just letting them know that as the semester goes, I personally am going to be using more English. They are expected to use vocabulary in English, but during their explanations. I do agree, having this year start off with more of their native language, I've seen so much more math growth, like right off the back, like you said, because they're understanding, they're making connections, and they're free to debate in however they want about the concept, because it is about the math. And then the vocabulary has been coming in. So you'll hear them in class be like, no, porque el x-intercept es esto. So, and then I'm just like, it's like those little moments. I'm like, okay, yeah, I made the right decision this year. Right. I do agree with what you're saying, that letting them speak in the, whatever native language that is, it's great. And I think I'm very lucky this year that all of them, their native language is Spanish, or if not their first, their second. And then I wonder like, okay, we're coming towards the end of the semester. Next semester is when my numbers change, right? Students leave, new students come in. And, you know, what if I don't end up with an all Spanish speaking class? And then it's like, okay, I'm going to have to be now thinking again creatively of how to include everybody when, you know, Spanish isn't their native language. How do I keep this rhythm, this confidence they have when now we got new members, and especially if that member doesn't speak their native language? How do I make sure everybody feels inclusive?
Right, yeah, that's tricky, right? But I think the best thing you can do is keep asking yourself that question, like, how do I include everybody? So the hardest one is like when you have one student that's alone, that doesn't have a conversation partner in native language. That's just difficult. So there's been things where people bring in, you know, people from the community to speak with them and things like that, but that's not maybe as practical for every day. So then you have to start thinking across multiple modalities, I would say. So instead of just speaking, can we draw? Can we use manipulatives? Can we use Desmos? Can we use different ways of showing our meaning and evidencing our understandings or communicating that don't require like us to always speak and listen in, you know, a particular language? You could use Google Translate, which I know is not great for all languages. And if your student's not fluent in reading and writing in their native language, then it doesn't really work. But you can try some of those things if they can read in their native language. There's great apps now where you just hold, even Google Translate does this, you hold it over text and it translates into their whatever language you want. And then it's at least a start, because even if it's not the greatest translation, they might still get the gist of it, which is helpful. So, I mean, just thinking about the ways that technology can support maybe the facilitation of like communication of ideas would be helpful. Encouraging people to gesture, showing on the board their work, and then maybe you letting them say it however they want to say it, and then maybe you restate and check in with them, you know, things like that, where you can make public displays of thinking are probably really helpful for kids. But it's challenging, but I would argue that even in a all English class, you're going to have different levels of understanding and things, and these things are really just brought to the forefront when we're working with students who are gaining proficiency in English. But they still are applicable in terms of like supporting learning in all environments.
SFUSD, San Francisco Unified School District, has this ABC, which means activity before concept, and then CBV, concept before vocabulary. I think that's all it is, that they're just like, and that's one that they've been pushing a lot in science, and that I would argue they should also be supporting in math, right? But the idea that if we focus a little bit on the conceptual development first, then you have something to hang vocabulary on. Whereas if you try to front load vocabulary, there isn't necessarily a schema or conceptual, it's not as concretely developed yet, because you aren't sure if everyone's had that experience or what students are bringing to it. So thinking a little bit about learning is happening more effectively through that method is something that I've been thinking about a lot, because I know that I was trained with the preview vocabulary methods, right? And it doesn't seem like that's really being as pushed anymore.
Right. Yeah, I think, so a lot of the things that we think are intuitive about teaching English learners or bilingual students tends not to be helpful. So front-loading vocabulary, it seems like a great idea, because like, I know that the terms in the language is kind of what's getting in the way. So let me just like put it all out there at the onset and then they can use it. But it's weird to use vocabulary where you don't have a strong conception of what you're talking about. So it's better to let them kind of build an understanding, use whatever words they can, and then you formalize it after they have a deeper understanding. Or as a school teacher, what I did often was I was like, I don't know how to speak Creole or French, so I will just take out all the language from the problem. But we communicate math through language and with language. And so if you take it all out, you're gonna lower the math demands of the tasks and whatever you're working on, because you're just turning into all procedures, and that's not okay too. So it's a lot of things that you're like, this doesn't seem to make sense. I should take out language because that's the barrier. But really, like, you want to build language, like you're saying, in both L1 and L2 and an understanding. So you really need to use a lot of language and have a really language rich classroom in order to support their math thinking well. And so that's the struggle, though, because if there's multiple languages, how do I build that language, that language-rich environment? And I think you do it by encouraging them to talk, to share. Let them share it slowly so you can try to track some numbers and stuff with L1, and then see if you can record what you think they're saying, or let them record and try to ask them as you go through. I mean, you get a lot through gestures and visuals, really, if you think about it. Emojis are great. You can use them, you know, so.
Griselda, yeah. Do you already use a lot of representations or manipulatives in your classrooms, or how does that normally go?
Yeah, so the manipulatives and my gestures depend on the units that we're doing. But I've been told that I'm very animated. So I feel like I'm like, when we were doing perpendicular and parallel with our students, like, I was on the floor, I was like up, and we were just like a couple of days working on rotations and translations and reflections. So there I was, you know, with all my physical body at one point, you know, trying to say like, you know, this is a rotation, and we got kids up and we're talking about rotations, the 90, the 180, and the 270. So in terms of manipulatives and, you know, gestures, like, I'm every year I'm trying to think of like, what else can I do to, you know, show them what is this thing we're talking about. But I do find myself having it be a little harder when it's more, what's the word? Like, when it's more algebraic and we're having to solve an equation, and they don't grasp the idea of like having to add two to both sides of the equation and why something canceled. Like, that's more not as visual of like, you know, oh, parallel, two lines that never intersect. And so then that's where I'm like, okay, like, what can I do? Do I go old school? Like, when I got taught and like actually bringing physical balances, you know, do we talk about like the algebra tiles? And then, you know, my mind starts thinking like, that's going to require more time, but is it worth it more time? So, so I try my best to make it as visual as well. But then when I get those to those places of like, oh, they're like, my visuals aren't helping, like, what else can I do? Now I'm falling behind.
Right.
And I don't want to say it's about pacing in the test, but like, at some point we're going to have to get there. And I haven't gotten there. So it's like, oh man, you know, what do I do now? I know this is going to be, and it's, like I said, it's gotten better just because this is my third year teaching math to sheltered specifically. So like, I've been able to fix some of those hiccups, and I'm hoping that like, the more I do it, the more hiccups I keep fixing and improving on. But I'm not going to lie, these first 3 years have been like up and down. Some days are better, some days are not so good.
Well, I think you could, like, just by knowing that you care and actually do caring, like, you know, building those relationships that you say you have been building with your students, I think that goes a long way, because we are teaching human beings, right? We're not just teaching little robots. So I think when those things do happen, or just acknowledging it and checking in with them, I think that's really important, especially for students who have been marginalized.
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking also about, I mean, you brought up so many things that I think everyone is struggling with, Griselda. Like, do I take the time to introduce something, and what's the, you know, is that going to be worth our time? And I know in the elementary world, we would definitely say, like, yeah, you definitely introduce some key manipulatives, because those manipulatives are going to be used over time in lots of situations, right? So I'm wondering if algebra tiles are one of those key manipulatives that it's definitely worth introducing, because we're going to use them not just for, you know, thinking about the algebraic properties and solving equations. We're also going to use them when it comes to polynomials, or, you know, and I'm just thinking of, like, what are your thoughts about that, Sandra? Is this one of those high leverage things that we want to take time for?
It really depends on how well they're going to be used by the teacher. If they're going to be consistently used, and maybe you can talk the next year's and the prior year's teachers into kind of, this is going to be something that we're going to use to support our students, then it probably is beneficial to take the time. If you're just going to use it one time, I find that some of these, or if they're going to be really proceduralized instead of building understanding, then I find that it's not worth the time. So it really depends on if you're willing to invest in using them as like a thinking tool that kids can consistently use. And then I would say also, we need to, anytime we use manipulatives, help them represent them on pencil and paper. Like, they have to bridge to away from the physical manipulatives to paper and pencil, or perhaps mental representations of those. And I think that's where a lot of teachers struggle to say, like, okay, we can use algebra tiles, but what are we really doing with the algebra tiles? Can we represent that with a drawing? How does that connect? And then in your brains, can you kind of think about what's happening with the algebra tiles as you do it, instead of having to physically model at the time when they're ready?
Yeah, because it does seem also like the use of the virtual algebra tiles. I saw, I don't know if how good people think these are or if teachers use them, but NCTM has their free interactives, and their algebra tiles seem like you could use to build models of things and then show through, you know, gesture or manipulation that you know that you're, you know, subtracting two from both sides or whatever it is that you need to do. And it might be the entry into also the sense making. So it seems like it could be useful to explore. And I love that Sandra's bringing up this idea of, like, but are you going to use them consistently? Because otherwise it can feel like, you know, it's a waste of everyone's time if we just try it once and it's like, oh, they don't get the time to develop it as a tool for thinking.
Right. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. So I don't know. I think the virtual ones are probably just as good as the other ones in a lot of ways. It depends on what you have access to also. But you could also just draw. You could use a lot of physical kind of like representation, or I mean, sorry, 2D representations when you're doing things on the board purposefully. To try to really help the students understand what's happening, and using contexts we know is really helpful.
I would love to use them if I knew they were going to be consistently being used, because I'm going to spend this time and energy showing them how they work and, you know, exploring with them. But if it's just for that unit, that's when I go back into that debate, like, is this worth slowing down because it'll help them later on? I don't know. So,
I wonder if we have some research on that. I only know from the elementary world about how manipulatives get positioned, where maybe the analogy is things like fraction tiles, which don't seem like they're going to be used quite as much. But because we know fractions are such a hard concept anyway, because of how they're a number and part of a set and this whole idea of the whole, it still seems very worth it to take the time with that manipulative, because it's such a hard thing to grasp anyway. So I wonder if that's kind of analogous to algebra and what algebra tiles might be able to do, even if they aren't used throughout the whole year. I'm not sure either.
I've been studying algebra for the last couple of years. I've been watching a lot of algebra lessons. And one of the things I've noticed is that a lot of us as teachers don't really have a good notion of how to support students in understanding solving equations beyond a procedural approach. And so I've been really focusing a lot of my ways of supporting teachers on developing a more relational understanding of the equal sign and working off of equivalent expressions and equations as a means of supporting students' understanding of algebra. And I think some of that is pertinent to everyone. And I'm not sure how unique that would be to English learners at all, probably not at all, but really thinking about, so if that's an area where your students are struggling or there's something that's you feel not right, I'd encourage you to look up like a more relational approach to solving equations as another way of maybe building their understanding of the concept rather than what we usually teach, which is undoing the order of operations or whatever it is that a lot of us do.
Yeah. So, and I mean, like algebra is only like one small portion of this whole core plus unit, which I guess I have to go back to like the fact that it's so language heavy. Like, cause you open up a page and the kids are like, whoa, this doesn't look like a regular textbook, right? Like that they're used to the traditional type, because now there's so many words and stories, and having to work off of that textbook and, you know, this is the problem we've agreed as a math site, you know, that we're going to be emphasizing in, like, how do we do it? And thankfully our district has been very good about creating what we call these task cards. So yeah. They've taken like a problem from the Core Plus book and try to make it more engaging in terms of like, it's more of group work. It's more student curiosity. It has more room for student conversation. But even with the task cards, what I'm finding is that like, yes, thankfully somebody's done the modification for me, but it's like, now I have to think about it. Is it truly modified with English language learners in mind? And so that's one of the conversations the math district host and I have been having. And he's like, oh, it would have been great if you would have been there with me when we were creating these, because I hadn't thought about it in this lens. And I'm like, well, I hadn't either until before, because like I've been barely working with the ELD teachers. And that's when my knowledge has grown. So now in my head, I'm thinking, how can we all work together so that we can be having these conversations and being a little bit more realistic about like, you know, this textbook for this particular group of students who are struggling, like, you know, what are some realistic modifications that we can do?
Can I ask you, so do you find that their struggle, the difficulties that they're encountering are understanding the written tasks, or is it like, where is the hard part? So Core Plus, if people are not familiar, tends to have like, you know, tasks that are written and they're kind of lengthy sometimes with stories because they contextualize it, which is something that a lot of research has said is positive for ELs. Mm-hmm. But you're saying that a lot of that seems like also a barrier because it is so lengthy. So is it in, say they could understand the story, is it the math or is it the language or is it a combination of both that you're finding is difficult for them?
It's a little bit of a combination of both, to be honest. So like, because they can read it a lot of the times, but are they understanding what they're reading? That's where I'm like, they read it and everybody's like really nice and yes, we get it. But then we go to work and it's like, what do they mean here? And what is this? And what is this word? So it becomes like, we didn't understand what we read.
Okay. Yeah. So when I think about it, I think, do they have the access before they start? So one of the things that's good to ask is like, okay, are we all on the same page? Do we actually know what the question is asking? Because that's one thing, right? If I don't know what the question is asking, I don't have access. And we need to have access to like whatever the question is asking. So this is where I found, there's some nice studies, and then my friend Jiang and I also did a study on support monolingual English teachers working with bilingual students on tasks, cognitively demanding tasks. And what we found is that the setup is super important, and there's been lots written on the setup by other people as well. But so like when you're actually launching it and they're reading it, and you're totally right, I could read something in Portuguese and I could read it to you, I could tell you what it's about, but it doesn't mean I have a deep understanding. spending time on the launch is time well spent. So making it interactive, asking them to restate in their own words what's going on. Can you simply ask, what are we investigating? Can we activate some prior knowledge by saying, like, what are some strategies? Or saying, what's an approach that might not work, that we might not try, and why? What's an approach that might work, and why? You know, that kind of stuff.
I'm thinking about that. I threw into the chat an example of the way that I was introduced to this idea. And I know there's other authors out there who've written about this, but I learned about it through the Jackson et al. Article about launching complex tasks. And the idea there being that when you spend, they found in their big research that, like, when you spend the 5 minutes doing very intentional type of reading of the task and asking very intentional type of questions about students' understanding of both the context and the relationships between quantities, that you get very different payoff. And the goal with the launching that I understand is you're trying to ensure that most kids, because really we know that there are some students who are, they need differential support. So not everyone's always going to be able to get started the same way. And so the way I've seen it also taken up in the elementary world is putting the focus on questions like, tell me the story that's here. So we used to go straight to, like, what are we trying to figure out, right? And instead, the launching, we kind of stay away from that for a little bit and just say, like, to say in your own words what's happening, right? So can you make sense of what's happening here? And then you start to layer in, like, what is this? What is that? Layer in the numbers. And then the very last thing you do is say, like, who has an idea of how they're going to get started, right? So it's a really, it's a real different way to approach tasks. And I know also that some people, what they do is they expect or they hope across the year that they can start to gradually release from that launching, right? So, like, they might do a lot more very intentional launching of complex tasks at the beginning of the year and make anchor charts to help students think about the things they have to be thinking about to make sense of word problems. And their goal is to hopefully move away from having to do as complex launches as the semester moves on.
Right, because you're really trying to build that metacognitive ability in students to really think through. Because when I read tasks, I have this whole internal strip, but I don't think that's what all students do as they're reading and comprehending text in general. And so I think making that visible, or like giving them ways of thinking about their own thinking, or like making sense of things, is really helpful to kids. And then also, I mean, I don't know if Core Plus has a Spanish edition also, but if not, I mean, you said you speak Spanish, right? So you could read the task in L1 and just have a file of you reading it in case they want to go back and reference it, right? If they can't access it. And then that's a great way to get parents and community involved. Say you have a Vietnamese speaker, just ask like the Vietnamese, like a volunteer or a kid from a higher grade or something, to like read it and record it. And then you could just have that snippet if they need to hear it again, because they can't read in English, you know? So I think with technology, I bet people would volunteer also. Just put like a, well, I don't know about copyright, but like you could post to Facebook or something, like a snippet from a task. And you could say like, can somebody read this for me and record it real quick? We could record on Zoom right now, right? Like, a reading of it in Portuguese or whatever. And then that you have that for future years too, that they can hear it and they can just pull it up if they need it again.
Yeah. And I think one thing, as I'm hearing you talk about like establishing routines of like, you know, how to decontextualize a text and all that, I'm like thinking in my head, maybe I'm just being too hard on myself. And I'm like, okay, some of the things you're talking about, I'm like, okay, yes, we have like this thing we do when we read, right? And we are constantly checking in with our partners and like, you know, what do you think you're being asked to do? And I try to emphasize the fact that I'm not asking you right now to talk about how to do the problem, but do you even know what like the question is asking you to find? And so that's where we end up our conversation before they go to their whiteboard. So one thing I left out is like when we're doing the investigation, like everybody is in their big group, they're grouped in 3 to 4 and everybody's up on the whiteboard working on their problem and everything. So all their rough draft thinking is on the whiteboard, because that's our rough draft thinking. So it doesn't have to be perfect. So, but before that, like we've done the reading, we've checked in with each other. What are some things we're understanding? What are some that we're not? And, you know, and then finally, the last thing we discuss is like, what is the question asking? Okay, now we get the story, but what is it that we're trying to find? So as I'm hearing you, I'm like, okay, maybe I'm being too hard on myself or I'm overthinking sometimes, but like, you know, if I keep this going, maybe like, you know, like it's become more natural. We know this is our routine. So they are becoming empowered, I guess you could say, in their reading. Is just, I'm always thinking of like what else I can do, like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're making me think a little bit also of like tweaking the routine or tweaking your prompts every now and then, right? Because that's how we develop the depth. Like, so if everyone seems to have a good handle on like the retelling of the story and the figuring out like what are we trying to answer, you know, we might layer on like the what is the answer going to sound like, what are the units going to be, you know, or like, and just kind of thinking about how you keep their repertoire developing and deepening. It's a little unfair, I feel, that, you know, essentially what we're talking about is the idea that you're also an ELA teacher, you're an English language arts teacher, if you are a teacher of students of math now. But at the same time, that's the reality, right? So in addition to thinking about how students learn the content and how they develop their academic language, we're also thinking about how do we support them to develop their language analysis skills and making sense of written word and do the writing themselves too, right?
Yeah, so I think you said a lot of great things, Maria, and then also Griselda, you have like good strategies. I love that. I can imagine the whiteboards around the room and the kids can have access to everybody's rough drafts, shout out to Mandy, on that. But that's beautiful. And imagine if your rough draft was in Spanish, say, and then you say like, okay, so that was your rough draft, that was your thinking. Can you like formalize it a little bit in English? So you're trying to push them towards that. So they do have like a draft that they're okay with in their home language. And then maybe you push them to do as good a draft as they can. Maybe the rough draft's in English, I don't know. But, you know, so like you can continue to push them. I think thinking about all four of the language skills is really nice too, as you think through this. So reading, what am I doing to support reading? What am I doing to support writing? What am I doing to support listening and speaking? You know, so there's all those four things. And I think in math, we go heavy a lot of the times on the writing and the listening. But it sounds like you have a lot of speech going on in your class, which is great. And we also have like reading going on. So both those receptive skills and the productive skills need to be valued and really just enriched in both L1 and L2. And it'll make just everything go better, I think. It's just being really conscious of it. And like Maria said, trying new things so they don't get routinized as badly. So if we always say like, okay, what's the story in your own words, that gets to be a procedure rather than like a really thinking tool.
I agree. And I think the more I'm hearing you all talk, it's like, I have to think about like, you know, what can I do to make it more rich? And so I think that idea of like, I think Maria said it, like, what would it, an answer sound like? I think that's a good place for me right now, because we have established this routine of reading and, you know, trying to make sense and then asking ourselves, what is the problem asking? And then pushing them to think about like, we may not know the solution, but like, what could our sentence for our solution start, right? Or look like, sound like, because they're doing beautiful thinking. That's mm-hmm. for sure. But I think, yeah, like how can I push them? And I do like that idea that Maria brought up.
Right. And you could also just stop them before you get to the end and just say like, okay, we're all at different places. What have we tried so far? So sharing incomplete processes and then also wrong answers so that we get to, I mean, especially if it's not your native language, sharing things that it's safer to share wrong answers because you know it's going to be wrong anyway. So it doesn't have to be beautiful and complete. It could be very incomplete thinking, which is why I love the idea of rough draft thinking.
Yeah, yeah. And that's one thing we've been working on with our small professional learning community or PLC groups, is this like trying to really emphasize this idea of like, we don't do presentations. We're just sharing our thoughts. We're you know, on the whiteboard, I don't want final solutions. Just show me your rough draft thinking. And that's what we're going to be when the share out comes. Because I do try to cut them before like 5-minute time frames. Like, okay, let's see what we're talking about. And somebody will share what they've done so far. And I really try to emphasize this. It's like, I don't want to know about like you know, you added to, like, but like, why did you choose to do something? So it's more about like presenting what they're thinking and why they thought that way. Mm-hmm. And again, then that in itself has been a journey, getting them to be like, wait, so you don't want me to share what I got? You want me to share what I'm thinking? And so that's been a mindset that we've had to adjust in our students, because they're not used to being told, what are you thinking? They're used to being told, am I right or am I wrong? Like, because at the beginning of the year, it's like, Mr. Sendis, this is right. Mr. Sendis, this is wrong. And then my response is like, well, tell me how, like, what are you thinking? And they're like, what? Like, so it's been a journey in that in its own. But yeah, the rough draft thinking, I think has brought a lot of like the anxiety level down of like, oh, Mr. Sendis is making me talk. But like, if I'm wrong, it's okay. It doesn't matter. And we've had really good discussions about like, oh, so it wasn't like this, but like, you know, my work was still valid because, you know, I was actually going this other route. So, right. So it's still, I feel like it's been an empowering process, but it's been a process, to say the least, of like working through that and getting over those notions that they have of like, I have to be right, 'cause it's math class. There's the right answer.
I would take a critical eye to any assessments you give as well, because one of the things that I see sometimes is that we get into this good habit of sharing incompleteness and stuff, but all the assessments are still just right answers. And that's a hard tradition to break. So really being critical of yourself and making sure that you have opportunities for them to share wrong answers, incomplete thinking on assessments, and them to get like, you know, some value, whatever, however you assign value to thinking in your class. Because sometimes we'll be all in during lessons, and then on the assessment where it really counts, it's not aligned to that. So just being really critical of that.
Yeah, I'll agree that our assessments, I feel, could use improvement. And, you know, throughout the years, they've gotten better, but I still feel like there's more room for progress on them, because I still feel there's not a correct balance between, like, because in class, I'm thinking, like, wow, everybody's having all these like aha moment and understanding and like our assessment, and I'm like, but it doesn't reflect what we had in class, you know? And, you know, so that's like a different topic, you know, of my feelings towards assessments. But, you know, I do agree, like, our assessments and what happens in class don't properly correlate with one another. But
yeah, I feel like that happens in a lot of classrooms.
Yeah. But in terms of like the things I can't control right now, I'm like, I do see progress, but I'm just like, what else can I do? Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
it's a journey.
Yeah. And you could definitely say, even on assessment, if you want a small one, you could say like, explain the best you can in English if you have a written explanation, but then say like, you can also write it in your L1 if you want. And then you're just going to maybe have to get help interpreting it if it's not a language you speak, but they might get deeper with their L1.
Yeah, they probably would. And they are allowed to write in Spanish, and Spanglish, to be honest. Yeah. Because I think I do have that benefit on my side that I can read and write and speak in Spanish. So like, mm-hmm. I think that's also allowed them to be like, okay, so I can do it and still get credit. Yeah, you can still get credit. So,
right.
You know, but that's like my position. And then I wonder about these other teachers who maybe whatever language their students speak is not theirs, and you know what struggles they might be going through, because I do have that plus that we can freely talk and debate math, and you know I can assess that they're definitely understanding, and I know past, at least in our school, like some of the shelter teachers don't have that fluency, and so it's maybe harder. I've never really had a deep conversation with them, but I do wonder like what struggles are they going through. If I'm going through these, what might they be going through, you know? And then, you know, what supports do they need?
Well, just think about when you have Asian students and you don't speak their language. It's the same things that you encounter, right? So, but think about some of the strategies you can share with them that you do that might help.
Yeah, so trying to work more, because I'm the math 2-1, right? And so we have a math 1 and it's his first year. So I'm checking in on him constantly, like, what's going on? What do you want? So it's, I keep calling it a journey, because I'm like, a journey takes you anywhere. And really, that's
right.
Taking me everywhere that I may have and may have not thought.
I want to thank Zandra and Griselda one more time for joining us on the podcast. And Griselda, we're sure hoping we can check in with you towards the end of the school year one more time and see how things have been going this new semester. Zandra is also on the board of Toto's Mathematics for All. And stay tuned as I play a little message about a special project around student agency.
We here at Toto's are excited about a new project we're starting. For the first half of 2020, we will be coordinating our efforts to take a deep dive into the idea of agency, which happens to be a big focus of our conference in June.
We realize that many people talk about agency regarding students, teachers, adults, etc., but there isn't a lot of consensus of what we all mean. So for the next months, we will be using all of our Toto's resources, blogs, Twitter, podcasts, publications, and more to explore the idea of agency with all of you. Just be sure to follow our hashtag Toto's for Agency for like 4.
So follow along and invite friends, colleagues, students into the conversation. We are looking forward to learning with and from all of you.
Así que invita a tus amigos, a tus colegas, a los estudiantes para que se unan a nuestra conversación y esperamos aprender mucho con ustedes y de ustedes. Gracias.
The Toto's Podcast is a production of Toto's Mathematics for All. I've been Maria Zavala, your host, and until I hear you next time, actually until you hear me next time, seguimos luchando. Adios.